let's get into more detail on this, right? So we've covered the foundations, we've spoken about goals, visions, organisation, planning. We've kind of laid that sort of bedrock, if you like, of what everything else is going to get built on. Now we're going to get into the sort of the more marketing basics, the fundamentals, how we sell stuff. You know, what makes people buy, what motivates them, what are these emotional triggers, how are we actually going to get to the point where we can create things that, that people want to park cash to get. So I'm just going to open this up, and you can fire out some of your suggestions, and we'll, because our little dude here should be, there he is. Why do people buy? Just any answers at all?
Problem
solving.
Want
shortcut.
Time saving. get out of their current situation.
Escape situation. Yeah, keep them coming.
Might need it in the future.
Pardon me?
Might need it in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy's a good seller.
Future need.
Transformation.
Sounds nice.
It's an email from Michael Cheney. Oh boy.
Bonus points. Ching ching! Any more? Sorry? Any more? Okay. I think, and it's just my opinion, it could be totally wrong, most of these can all be kind of summarized or put under the bracket. When you read this over the top here, pain. If you think about your own buying decisions, I'm not necessarily talking about the smaller investments of like $9 or whatever, but if you think about buying a house, buying a car, coming to this event, pain. Pain is typically, I believe, what motivates people to buy. You don't drop $1,000 or $2,000 or $10,000 on something unless you're in a position of discomfort about your current situation. I think it's yourself, Jim, was it you said? The escape your current situation, was it you? Yeah. So, take the house example, right? Unless you're obviously just like rolling in money and just like, oh yeah, we'll just go buy another house, right? Most people not in that position. So if you're going to move house, there's something going on in your life that's creating normally discomfort, because you've got two forces that are pulling on a decision, two emotional forces. You've got the desire, which is kind of pulling you towards this thing. Oh, I want this thing. I really need this thing. It's cool. And then you've got this force over here, which is like pain, which is like, oh my God, it's pushing. You know, I want to get away from that. I've got to escape that. Pain is far more powerful emotion than, and a driving force than desire, right? Classic example I always use on this. You come home, it's like, no, say there's nobody at home, you've got no idea of what you're going to have for dinner, and you step in the door and you're thinking, oh yeah, I really want a pizza. Right? You've got this desire for a pizza. But as you step in the door, you take your shoes off, you take your first step forward, you step on a nail, I'm pretty sure the desire for a pizza will be secondary to the pain as the nail's in your foot. So it's a kind of stupid example, but nice. I like to drive it home through the foot. The pain is a high motivating factor for people's buying decisions. And it's more the case that the higher the level of investment, the more pain, quotes, that there needs to be, or high level of discomfort of the current situation for them to want to make that leap to escape that discomfort and that pain. So, and we will see this, we'll repeat on this theme a lot during this training. And it does make some people uncomfortable, because they're like, ah, oh, do we have to inflict pain? Are we talking about like twisting the knife and like rubbing salt in the wound and all these kind of things? No, we don't. It's really about highlighting the reality of people's situations. OK? okay? Because we're all good, as human beings, we're all good at blinkering the reality, saying, oh, no, everything's fine, actually. But when somebody else comes in from the outside and gives you that objective input and shines that sort of harsh light of reality on things, sometimes it's only then that you realize, yeah, I am, it is pretty uncomfortable, the situation I'm in right now. It is actually kind of painful. I've been trying to block it with, you know, food, drink, or distractions, or Game of Thrones, or whatever. But actually, now you've said that, and you've highlighted that I'm not doing this, or I'm feeling, yeah, you're right. So, yeah, I do need to do something about it. Now, of course, we're doing all of this ethically, right? We're doing this, if we get down to brass tacks, I was talking to Mike about this in the break, we're doing it to make a difference. Right? We're not doing it to make sales and make money. We're doing it because, going back to this first thing, if I can even find this, it's irrelevant, that to get people from A to B, we want to help people, right? That's our mission, I believe, as human beings, whether you're selling stuff or whatever, is to help other people. And highlighting this pain, shining that light of truth on it and making people really see what's going on, it's your responsibility and duty to do that, to help them make the right decision. Okay, so it's not about saying, oh, well, let's make them feel really uncomfortable and awkward and make them feel really crap about where they are now so that we can sell them some magical solution and make a ton of money. It's our responsibility to do that, to help them get and improve their lives. Now, obviously, you need something of value that is going to actually do that before you get engaged in this kind of, you know, conversation and communication with people. So once you realize this, you can start to look at things with kind of a certain lens when you see the kind of copywriting that's done online, the kind of words that are used in emails and sales letters and so on. So, you know, there are different styles, and some people appeal to that kind of the desire angle, and oh, look at what you can get, and this is what this will do for you. But I would bet my bottom dollar that if you focus more on where they're currently at and the frustration that they're having and the fact that you have a solution that's going to remove that pain, you'll generate more sales and say, look at this carrot, come and get this cool thing. It's just human nature. People want to remove that. They want to get away from that pain. So, using the example of the YouTube thing, if we were selling some kind of YouTube product, even if, and again, it's not just selling, this is getting people to take action on anything. Could be an opt-in form to get them to put their email address in, or even just a sentence to try and get them to click on a link. Using the pain angle versus the desire angle can have, you know, more of an impact. So using that YouTube example, the desire method might say, you know, if you want to get top of YouTube, you know, come and grab this great product, whatever. The pain angle might say, you know, are you sick of wasting time on YouTube and creating videos, you know, slaving away for hours on end and skipping meals, and you put your video up and you get zero views and you feel like a total loser. I mean, obviously, I'm going over the top, but you paint that picture, you paint that picture, and people are like, yeah, I am sick of that. Yeah, let's end this. Let's get this sorted out. Now, of course, you can combine the two. It's not an either-or situation, but you need to hit on this pain in what you're doing, in the marketing that you're putting out, so that people will take action and realize that where they're at now is not ideal for them. Now, obviously, there'll be people that get this message like, well, no, I'm not feeling that. I don't have that. Fine, they're not a customer. All good. We're not saying that everybody's feeling this pain or everyone is in this uncomfortable position, but for those that are, when we describe it in that way, it's going to really reach out to them and leap off the page, and they're like, yeah, I feel that, and that's, you know, I want to get that resolved because I don't want to go through that again. So it's important, and we'll come on to that. We're going to touch on copywriting and emails and all that kind of stuff as well. So that's kind of the basics, I believe, about why people buy, and that's going to be, as I say, a common theme that we'll be touching on. I want you to really, really remember that, because it's important for everything that you create. So we don't want to get stuck into this situation where you're all G'd up and you're buoyed up and you're like, yeah, let's create something. You create it, and then we kind of retrospectively say, well, how are we going to sell this? You see this all the time. Like even I could drop some names here, and you'd be surprised how many people still do this at the highest level of internet marketing. Oh, I've got this product, and they come to me because they know that I know copywriting, and they know that I write all my own sales letters, and I write some of the sales letters for some of the top guys in IM, because they don't get this. They don't understand it. So they come with a product, and I've got this great thing. Oh man, this is awesome. It's like a widget. It does this. It's a WordPress thing, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, hello? What? Who needs this? Like, what's the problem? Like, where's the pain? You've created a product without even looking where the need and the problem is in the first place. So pain is important in terms of selecting an area that you might focus on to become that express expert. Because you don't want to go and focus, oh, I'm going to become an expert in, underwater beaver knitting or something. Nobody's like lying awake at night saying, oh my God, I'm so hacked off that I can't do underwater beaver knitting. It's like, was it? Yeah, they showed me your search history at the reception, actually. So. That was probably the least surprising. I've totally lost my train of thought. When you're creating the products, you don't want to come out with a thing first. I'm saying products, but it could just be this little report. It could be the hook that you use, to get people into a landing page or whatever. You don't want to do that first and then think about this and try and shoehorn it in. This pain and getting the pain across and the story. We're going to go on to story as well and how powerful story is and how you can use that. You don't want to do that retrospectively. You want to be thinking about this first. So, yeah, choose an area that you know people are frustrated with. Now, and in internet marketing, there's a lot of areas to choose from because people are frustrated about all kinds of stuff. Technical stuff, I can't do this, I don't know how to do this, this is tying me up in knots, I can't get traffic, I don't know how to build a list, endless. So there's no shortage of pain out there. You just need to choose an area that you know people are hacked off with because they can't crack it. Spend some time and get some answers, and then you're part way there. Okay, I've looked at this and I'm thinking, what is this secret? So, the simple secret, which has made me. Oh yeah, yeah. Here we go. This is why you pay top dollar. Yeah. Memory. That wasn't the number. Yeah. So Jenny touched on this because I think she kind of knew where I was heading with one of her answers about why people buy. And Jenny said people buy because they want stuff. So some of you will have seen this. Basically, there's marketers that sell things that they think people need. Okay? So we're going to use a metaphor here. Some people will know this. I hear giggles rippling around the room. Steady is green, okay? This, broccoli, okay? A lot of marketers sell what people need, broccoli, right? So broccoli is something that you need without getting into the full nutrition. It's got nutritional value, it's good for you, it's got fiber in it, protein in it. You need it, right? Something like it, vegetables, right? So you need broccoli. So some marketers think, people really need, I'll tell you what they really need, they need an organizational tool that will help them, that will go into WordPress and it will organize everything that they do. And they'll go off and they'll create this thing and say, right, it's going to make me millions. This, people need this. Well, broccoli might have all those things and it might be something that you need, but how many people actually eat broccoli, really, right? Okay, there's a few people. Most people don't want broccoli. Right. They don't buy what they need, right? Look at this country. I don't know what it's like in other countries around the world. Most people in this country don't have a pension. They don't buy things that they need. They buy big TVs. You don't need a big TV. You need a pension. You need investments. Most people buy a PlayStation or they buy a holiday rather than put a nest egg aside for, when they need health care or whatever. People don't buy what they need. They buy what they want, okay? So what people want, and I don't have brown, I don't think. is chocolate. And of course, I'm generalising, I know there'll be some health nuts in here, a little bit like myself that, well, I'll just say I don't eat chocolate. I do eat chocolate, but...
Dark chocolate.
Okay, chocolate. People want chocolate, right? So you've got marketers over here that are selling stuff that people need. Well, I say selling stuff, they're trying to sell it, but they ain't selling any because people don't buy what they need. Over here we've got chocolate, right? People want chocolate, it's tasty, it's yummy, ooh, gives you that buzz. But to be honest, it's nutritionally pretty crap, unless we're talking dark chocolate, okay? It's full of fat, sugar, caffeine, all the good stuff, right? So it's not really what you need, but it is what most people want. But if you're a marketer and you do this, and you think, okay, I'm going to sell what people need, what people want. I'm going to sell this magic push button thing, and it's, you know, it promises all this stuff, people want instant money, so I'm going to sell this. And if they buy into it, and there's nothing of substance there, yeah, their teeth are going to fall out, they're going to get fat, and they're going to sue you, and they're going to refund. Right? So, marketers that sell broccoli make no sales. Marketers that sell chocolate are basically scammers, because they're selling things that people want, but there's no substance, there's nothing there, it can't actually exist. So what you need to do is sell chocolate-covered broccoli. Right? So this is your chocolate-covered broccoli. Okay, now this is not about bait and switch. It's very important. Some people misinterpret this and like, oh, I see what you're saying. They're saying this push button millions and then you get in and it takes you like 1,000 hours to set up and it's got nothing to do with what you said. Well, no. This is about positioning and wrapping the product that you're selling and the offer you're selling in a way that appeals to people's desires and gives them something that they want. But you need to give them what they need when they get in there. If you go out from the outset and say, this is what you need. You know, and I've done this, I've made this mistake many, many times. You won't sell anything. But more importantly, you won't help anybody because nobody's going to buy it and it's your mission to help people. And if you're trying to sell stuff that they need and they don't buy it, you're not helping them. So, by doing this chocolate-covered broccoli, what you're doing is you're appealing to that desire. You're still using the pain to get them to the point where they want to buy it, but you're also using this desire as well. They make that decision. They get it. But when they get in, obviously you have to give them what they actually need. So, like many things that we're talking about in this weekend, it's that balance. Now, you can't go all out on the sort of the chocolate front and really, you know, hype the crap out of this thing and there's nothing of substance. And by the other token, you can't just be think you do. I mean, you know, I appreciate and understand the reason of people that do that. Think, oh, I've created this thing. People really need this. You know, I mean, one of the products that I created was it was a personal development product. It was called Secret Momentum Lab, and actually it was how I met my PA, John, at the back here. He invested in the program and went on and made some quite radical transformations with his fitness and so on. But most people aren't like John. John's very special, for those of you that have already met him know that. Hardly anybody bought that. Everybody needed it. Everybody. I was like, people need this thing. It's like a personal development thing. It's going to change their lives. It, you know, it's how to time manage and how to organize. And same as what I've gone through. Imagine if I had pitched this event saying, I'm going to teach you how to do a daily planner and organizational, you'd be like, oh my God, take my money, please. This sounds so interesting. Right? But you need it. But the mistake that I made for that particular product is thinking, you know, altruistically kind of thing, oh yeah, I'm really helping people with this. This is what they need. But it didn't help people. It didn't help many people because I forgot this. You know, they didn't see it. Like, well, yeah, I know I need it. I ain't going to buy it. I don't want to do that. But if I'd have just changed the angle slightly, if I'd have said, okay, this is rather than being the, you know, personal development thing, rather than being a thing about gain momentum, if this was like a wealth program and it's going to get you, you know, enable you to be more efficient and more effective and generate more income with less time, which is what it ultimately did, I would have sold a whole bunch of it. But I didn't, because I was focusing on what people need instead of what people want. So It's very important to do that. And those twin forces, I say, of desire and pain, when you use those together in your, you know, your emails, in your, you know, your promotions, in your copy generally, people will take action. You know, you'll help people and move them, get them closer from A to B in terms of whatever you're helping them with. So, important stuff. Now, where did I leave my clicker? Yeah. Okay, so what's the process? Let's get more sort of into the detail of this. Right, we've spoken about what makes people buy, the buying triggers, the emotions, and so on. Let's talk about the process. So back to this dude. So what we're going to do? Okay. As you've probably gathered by now, I like to keep things pretty simple. I'm not, you know, overcomplicate things. If it can be done simple, that's how I'm going to do it. Not always the way, as I said, with the diagram, messy diagram at the start. It definitely wasn't me in any area of my life at all. I was an absolute mess. I was like spaghetti. But now, straight line. So there's many ways to do this, to turn people's desire and their frustration, turn that into money and sell stuff online. My method or preferred method is pretty easy. And obviously, we're going to get into the detail on each of these throughout this weekend. We're only now really just getting into some of the specifics, as you can probably guess. Traffic going down onto a landing page. So your landing page or your squeeze page, opt-in page, same thing, basically stick your email in. Get them onto a autoresponder, which I'll just put as AR because I'm lazy and do not want to write out autoresponder. Money. In a nutshell, that is basically the process. Okay, you're going to be sending traffic. You're going to get people opting in to get some stuff. You're going to get them on your autoresponder. It's going to send them emails and you can generate income from that. Now, there are, of course, I mean, for each of these things, you know, we could spend a week right here on traffic. We could spend a week on, you know, I'm just going to go through what I do and what works for me. So, from an autoresponder point of view, and some of you may know this, you've got different types of messages that go out from an autoresponder. When people first jump onto that list, you've got an instant message which goes out. It says, okay, great, here's the thing. Right? You've just opted in to get the thing, here is the thing. Right? So that's the first type of message that's going to go out. The next messages that you want to have in there are follow-up messages selling stuff. Right? And even the first message can sell stuff. We'll talk about different strategies on that in a second. So then you've got the follow-up messages. So they're getting the instant message, giving them what you've promised them. Then, over a period of days, weeks, months, years, doesn't matter, you want follow-up drip-fed campaigns going out that say, okay, here's some more stuff. And you can queue this up in advance. Right? So you can write these emails or have somebody else write them, and you can pop them all into your autoresponder. And when somebody joins the list, they get that instant message, and next day they're going to get this message, and next day they're going to move along, and they're going to keep getting these emails. You write it one time, you queue it up, and it's all going out automatically.
And I thought you were up all night sending me emails to
do it. Yeah, sorry to ruin the illusion. Yeah, I was on my iPhone individually sending 20,000 emails last night. So yeah, it's pretty cool, right? And you can queue all this up in advance. So that whenever anybody drops into that funnel or, you know, autoresponder series, ping, 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 they're just going to get this series of emails. On top of that, you've got broadcast emails, which are live, kind of, I've got something to say type of emails that are in addition to the kind of pre-scheduled ones. Okay, and you can send those out. It's, you know, there's different ways of doing it, but you can send those on as well as the queued up ones, like on top of, which if you're me is probably not the greatest idea because, as you know, I send a lot of emails anyway. Or you can wait until people come through the sequence. you know, if you've got a 3-week sequence or a 90-day sequence or whatever, you can say, right, I want to broadcast to my list. Maybe you've got a list of 1,000 people. Maybe 200 people are still going through this follow-up sequence and you're promoting product X, Y, and Z in there. You don't want to hit them with another offer until they've migrated through that thing because you've invested time building that out. You know, you don't want to smack them over the head with someone else necessarily, right? So you might wait until they've gone through that and say, when I'm broadcasting out, let me only broadcast out this message to guys that have graduated from that series. Does that make sense? And you can, there's various different things
you can. At that point, you just migrate people onto another list. Once they've gone through that sequence, do you then have an automation to move them onto a separate list, or do you just do it by times?
I was just going to say that. There's different ways you can do it. A lot of people talk about list segmentation, and I've got these buyers here, and I've got these prospects here, these people have bought this product, these people have bought this level of product on it, it's awesome, because I'm going to be able to do all this different stuff with them. Fine. I personally don't do that. If I've got a message that can make me money, I'm sending it to everybody. You know, within reason. Obviously, there's circumstances where people, maybe when it's one of my products and I can control it a little easier, I won't send out a message to people that have already invested in it, because it might annoy them. But typically, I will just email everybody everything, as long as they're out of the sequences that I've set up. So I've got sequences like this where people come into my business for the first time, and they'll go through maybe a week or 2-week sequence, and that's that. It's fire and forget.
At the end of that sequence, do you specifically move them onto another list so it's easier to know that they've gone through the sequence?
You can. It depends which autoresponder you use. Some of you can do that, so it'll automatically, as you say, once they've graduated kind of thing, move them onto a different list. You can even set up things so if they buy, stick them on this list. What I do is I just say, the autoresponder does it for me. I just say broadcast to everybody, not in a sequence. So it goes through, the autoresponder goes through and says, okay, we've got all these people here, these guys are still in a sequence.
So you can do that with all the autoresponders?
I believe so, yeah. You can do it with GetResponse, I'm pretty sure you can do it with AWeb.
So they're getting the scheduled emails and your broadcast.
Exactly.
At the same day, same.
Yeah. Now, in terms of email volume, it's a tricky subject. It's a kind of contentious subject about how many emails to send. I like to get my prospects used to my style and frequency of email early on. As I said before, if you do something for too long with prospects and change it up, it's going to cause frustration and confusion and alarm with them. So when they come into one of my sequences, generally, I don't go mental on the first day. I'm not spamming them 7 emails. I wait at least a day for that. I send them the first email on the first day, and then I'll kind of ramp it up on the next day. Maybe send 2 or 3 on the next day. That's just me. I've got a high output, as I said before, because of the process that John and I have. I'm able to turn around emails fast. You know, we can create, as I said, about 30 emails, 25, 30 emails between us. Probably in about a space of a working day. So it's easier for me, possibly, to create and be churning out 3 to 4 emails a day than it is for most people. For most people, even the thought of having to write 3 or 4 emails a day, you know, just thinking about it might take them all day. Like, oh my God, how am I going to do this? But when you get into it, when you get into this habit, and you just realize how easy it is, you just start having fun with it, you just be yourself, and you just take the filter off, and you just don't, adopt this attitude, you just don't care, you just be yourself, and you'll attract people who like you for who you are, and stop trying to put on a marketer hat and just be yourself. It's just like talking, it's easy. So I get people in, send them that first email, and then send them probably like 3 each day throughout that sequence. So the cool thing, and some of this is fairly new that autoresponders will let you do, it used to be the case you could only send 1 email a day. So you queue it up, and it would go out at the time, the same time that they opted in, right? So if they opt in today, like now, like 11:20 a.m., they'll get the instant message that you've queued up, here's the thing. The next day at 11:20 a.m., they'll get the next message that you've sent. That used to be the way, and it was cool because you could send them an email every day. But now autoresponders are getting smart. Now, I don't know particularly about AWeber. I use GetResponse. That I've used it for years and years, so I know that intimately. I'm sure AWeber would have the same functionality. But with GetResponse, what it will enable you to is you can now send multiple emails queued up at certain times. Right? So you can say, okay, we'll give them an instant message on day one. Obviously, they've got a thing. Day two, let's send them, you know, three emails. We'll send them one at 10, one at 3 p.m., and one at 7 p.m. And they go out automatically to anybody that signs up at those times. Whether they do it today, next week, next year, those are the times. The day after they opted in, they will get those emails. Even cooler than that is the fact you can send it at local time. So their time, wherever they are in the world, because GetResponse has their details of when they opted in. So you could write an email, and I haven't done this. I mean, you could do it. That goes out at 7 a.m. says, good morning, before you have breakfast. And they're like, oh, this is cool. It's a real connect. You wrote this like a year ago. And it's been sent to 1,000 people. But it has that, that connection, that sort of sense of interaction because of this sort of functionality that you get. So, again, a lot of different things that you can do with autoresponders. But at a basic level, we're sending traffic. We're getting people to opt in because they want this thing. We're getting them on our list, and then we're sending them emails to make money. Now, the emails can promote your stuff if you have your own stuff at this point, or obviously they can promote other people's stuff doing affiliate marketing. So we'll get into the detail of each of these as we move through this. Okay, so let's talk about traffic. As I've said already, I'm not going to pull any punches. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm some kind of expert on paid traffic. I don't do paid traffic. I have done. I've spent and made a lot of money on Facebook ads. But what I found, I found a few things out with spending like 100 grand on Facebook. It's time consuming, for one. I mean, and I don't know if they do this on purpose. My guess is they probably do. But they change things so much in Facebook, in the ads. So often, they will make wholesale changes. So you're going through and you think, okay, I've got this down now, I've got a return on investment, great. Overnight, bosh, you'll get rid of that ad format, or we're changing what you can now put up, and you're like, oh my, it was a full-time job keeping on top of this. Learning the new stuff, following the leading guys in the industry that don't do internet marketing, I'm talking Facebook advertising consultants, and I'm trying to learn from these guys, and they're monitoring this round the clock. They're putting tweets out every day. Oh, this just been rolled out. This new, and I'm thinking, this is crazy. So it's, the paid methods, they're easy to spend money. Right? They make it say, oh yeah, just click here to boost this post. Ah, awesome, yeah, boost this post. $20, next day, you've got no way of knowing has that worked, have you made any money? And you go down into the rabbit warren of, okay, what's actually involved here? And so, as I said before, for me, if I can find a free way that works, I'll take the free way every time, particularly if it's more stable and more controllable than something that somebody else has got the reins to and can change overnight. Having said all that, this method uses Facebook, but it's not paid, okay? So it's the no list method, and it's dead, dead simple. And nobody has any excuse that they can't do this. Right? So you get a Facebook account. Now, I was talking to Samir. There's different, and you knew this was coming. There's different thoughts on how many Facebook accounts you should have. Are you going to get arrested by the FBI? Is Mark Zuckerberg come knocking on your door if you've got two accounts? I personally don't think so. Samir is from a due diligence background, so I know Samir would definitely in no way ever have two Facebook accounts. I understand that. It's a personal thing.
I followed you, and I used to.
Until he came knocking on your door. What I would recommend, okay, is get an account for your business stuff. Or, alternatively, tell all your friends and family that are going to be getting affiliate messages from you on a regular basis. Right, which isn't, it's not going to happen, right? So most of the marketers I know have got at least two accounts. You've got your friends and family and granny hoo-ha, as I like to say, and Auntie Miggins and all this. You've got that account. You're not going to say, oh, you know, Granny Hoo-ha, you know, go and buy this, you know, go and grab this autoresponder offer. There's only 9 days left at 50% off, and here's a spec. She doesn't want to hear that, right?
She doesn't know what the internet is.
Well, unless it's got to do with underwater beaver knitting, she definitely won't be interested. Right? So I would say get an account. I've got a business account that's for my business stuff. I've got a personal account that's for my personal stuff. Is it against the terms and conditions?
Yes.
Cameras off for a second, yes. But they've got bigger fish to fry, in my opinion. I don't see them, you know, clamping. I mean, there's something like 10 million animals in the world that have got Facebook accounts. So if they come knocking to my door, I'm taking the cats down first before they take me down. So yeah, I'd recommend that you get an account that's just for your business purposes. Next, and this is all specific to internet marketing. I know I've got a few people in the room that are not sort of doing pure internet marketing niche. They're doing other stuff, maybe health or whatever. That's fine. So, you know, extrapolate what I'm telling you accordingly. But for IM, you need to find the big guys in internet marketing. So I'm telling you this from zero. Like, if you haven't got a Facebook account, this is how you use this method. So you get a Facebook account. It's for your business. You stick your picture up on there. People are like, oh, should I use the same name? Should I use the same picture? Use your name, unless you're wanted by the FBI. Use your actual name. Use your actual picture. Make it different from the other account, just for the purposes of the fact you won't get confused when you're logging in, and you're suddenly posting a picture of heaven knows what in your business account, saying, can you believe the size of this? Or whatever, right? So be yourself, but just make it visually different, just so that you know when you're logging in and out which one you're in. Then find the big name. Just an excuse to use this, actually. Just feel a little bit like I'm in Star Wars or something. Find a big name internet marketers, right, and follow them, right? Friend them on Facebook. Start making connections. This is basically what we're doing, right? Now find others in their spheres of influence and befriend them. Now, when you're on Facebook, let me try and preempt a possible telepathic question here from Rob. You've got to be careful about how many people the friends that you add in Facebook. If you go crazy with this, then you know they'll shut you down and they'll throw a hissy fit. So you've got to kind of do it on a gradual basis, right? Once you've done this and you're starting to grow some friends, you're starting to make some connections, you need to do good stuff. Law of the universe. You know? Newsflash. You need to give stuff first, right? So you're going on there. You're engaging with people, you're liking their posts, sharing their posts, commenting on stuff. You're just getting involved in what's going on. Then, once you've done that and you've engaged, and all of this can be done about in the space of a week that we're going through here, right? Then you can start posting your own content, right? So it's things like, if you're unsure of content on Facebook, if you're ever uncertain, oh, I want to, because I get this, I don't know if you ever get this, you get a need to post something on Facebook, you just get a little burning, like, oh God, I just want to put something out there. But you don't quite know what to put out there. Ask a question, right? Just ask for people's opinion on stuff. There's this kind of misconception that if you're going to go out on social media and make a post or something, that you need to be preaching something. You know, that you need to be imparting some worldly wisdom. And it's not the case. You know, if you just post something that's interactive, that's going to get that engagement and likes. I mean, one of the best people, I can't remember the lady's name now that does this. Maybe it'll come back to me. But every day, she just posts simple questions like, what's your favorite autoresponder? Or what's the best product you bought lately? You know, guys, give me some input. Or, I'm stuck with these logos. Which logo do you guys prefer out of these two that I'm creating? And it's all interactive, and people are all over it. She gets like 20 comments and shares and likes. And she doesn't just do that. Obviously, we're getting towards the point of, you know, introducing the promotional stuff. But this kind of stuff gets that kind of support, gets that interaction. So, I don't know, Rob, sorry, were you going to ask a question? Because I rudely sort of assumed that I was going to know what it was.
Regarding the friending process.
Yes.
I've seen some people just kind of have a philosophy of try to get them to friend you I don't know if that's even something that, you know, there's a reason behind that, or if you've heard anything about that. Rather than going through and, you know, maxing out your friend requests for the day,
right?
Is there a reason to do one versus the other if you knew anything about that?
I would say, yeah, from a Facebook perspective, it probably looks better that they're requesting you rather than you requesting them. But I personally can't think how you would actually, you know...
Well, asking for things.
They get suggested, people that you...
People see that you talk to somebody else and they actually ask to...
Right, yeah. I was going to say, yeah, it would probably naturally happen anyway. I mean, I would probably recommend, I can't remember if I've got it on here, so I'm sort of trying to preempt myself. Okay, no, it's not on here. Yeah, it's just doing it at a small level. So there's a debate about the cap that you have per day on how many friend requests. Yeah, 50 is the last thing I heard, but they do seem to change it. So I'd recommend, you know, maybe doing, I don't know, 15 or so in the morning, 15 in the evening. You know, nobody's going to arrest you for that, right? If you do that for a week, a couple of weeks, just add it to your to-do list, grow connections. Before you know it, you're going to have a few hundred, you know, connections on this new account. It's the engagement, right? You can't just go on there. Some mistakes some people do is they go on, they max out the friend request one day, max it out the next day, max it out. They're not engaging, they're not posting, they're not commenting, they're not liking, they're not sharing, and then suddenly, bosh, go buy my stuff. And like, nobody clicked the link, and like now Facebook's banned me because all I did is add 1,000 friends in 2 minutes. What? I don't get it. So you've got to appear, you know, it's got to appear sort of organic rather than like, you know, artificial. Now with Facebook, there's this thing called EdgeRank. Does anybody know about EdgeRank?
Yeah.
Okay, there's a few guys. So EdgeRank is the formula that sits behind Facebook that determines what gets shown and what doesn't get shown, or to what degree it gets published on Facebook. So we'll see how this goes, have you ever put something on Facebook and thought, that was weird, I thought more people would have seen that? And you look at, has that ever happened to anybody?
Yeah.
Right? So this is the thing called EdgeRank. So everything on Facebook, every little task or activity that can take place is something they called an edge, right? So if you like something, that's an edge. If you post a picture, that's an edge. If you join Farmville 99, that's an edge. Everything's got an edge, and they give a weight to each of these things. Okay. Now this formula basically looks at the weight of the edge, so how important Facebook deems the particular activity that you've done. They also look at the affinity that you have, the affinity score, which I'll talk about in a second, and they look at something called time decay. Okay, so I'll probably actually whiteboard this out, even though Whiteboard Willie is not present. I'm going to go against his fascist regime, and I'm going to do it anyway. Okay, so we've got weight, affinity, and decay or time decay, right? And this is basically EdgeRank. It's like a maths lesson. This is my nightmare come true, right? So weight is the weight of the edge. Everything's got a different weight. Posting links, posting images, they've all got a different little score. Affinity, mega, mega important. You get a score behind the scenes from Facebook of affinity, which is how kind of well rated you are by Facebook for interaction and things like that. So if you make a post and typically people are liking it, they're commenting, they're sharing, all this kind of stuff, you're going to have a high affinity score. And what that means is the next time you post, Facebook looks at that score and says, this guy puts out good stuff, let's show this to a lot of people on the news feed. Okay. Right, because if you think about it, if you were shown everything that everybody did, of all the people that you were following on, can you imagine your news feed? Like, you know, it'd be crazy. You know, every little thing. So they have to come up with a formula to say, okay, let's just show this to 10% of his followers or 20%. So they look at this affinity score, and it's historic, right? So the last post that you made, if it totally bombed, if you posted a picture of your food, for example, it was really crap food and nobody liked it or commented it, the next time you post, Facebook's going to downgrade that because this will have gone down. So you're in a constant battle to keep the engagement up and the interaction. That's what they want. They want people on there all the time, engaging, liking, sharing, and staying in the Facebook prison, the Facebook website. So to do this, you need the interaction. You need to be posting these comments, starting debates, getting controversial, if you like, anything that's going to get the conversation going. And as I said, it doesn't have to be you imparting wisdom. It can be you asking for help. You know, I mean, some of the biggest posts I've, you know, most interactive posts I've seen, somebody was saying, do you like cupcakes? And it's like, 100 comments, 50 likes, you know, 5 shares. I mean, you can't do all that all the time, because it's like, well, you know, this guy's, you know, why is he talking about cupcakes? But occasionally it's just putting stuff out there, just, you know, personal stuff. You've got to mix this up. Which is another lesson, really, that I've learned in business. You know, when I first started out in business, and Jenny can testify to this, because Jenny's known me for many years, I was like suit and tie guy, you know, red tie and all this lot, and, you know, okay, right, what should I be saying now? How should I sound? And now I'm me. Like, this is me, you know, I'm the same out there, I am on my bike, as you know. And that seems like an obvious thing to say, but I think a lot of people get caught up in this marketer world and how am I going to come across here? Like, should I be, what's the right way to say this? Like, there is no, you know, lose the filter and you'll attract people that like you, just like in real life, right? It's not like, we'll do this. You know, everybody knows how to do that, you know, from kindergarten. You know how to make friends. Oh, yeah, just be myself and have a laugh. And then some reason, when you get into business, like, all right, how do I actually make connections? This is really weird. I'm going to have to talk, like, formally, and I might have to dress a bit different. And I don't buy that at all. I think just be who you are. Say what you want to say. Some people will hate it, and some people love it. So you've really got to... And we're going a bit off track, but again, this is important. You want to polarize people. And again, this is something I've only really started doing over the past 3-4 years, just when I basically just decided to sack it in, lose the filter, and just say, to hell with it, is polarize people. The last thing you want to do is think, I'm a little bit worried here about who this might offend, like, or filter yourself. I don't know, but should I be saying that? Say it. You know, it's who you are. That's what's going to get you those connections, the really strong connections. It's like, oh, this guy, he's like the real, I can't believe it. It's like him. It's like exactly like he is on Facebook, rather than he's saying some businessy stuff. Like, you're smirking, why? Because I know you are perfect at this. If you follow Mike on Facebook, he didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Right? And he's getting like 500 likes, and just being himself, just not worrying, not.
Yeah, you're either part of my tribe or you're not.
Exactly. You're on board or you're not. Because you don't want lukewarm people that are like, nah, I'll take it or leave it. You know, I get a lot of emails, you know, negative emails, as you know. Obviously, I get a lot of positive emails as well, but people just don't get me. You know, there's a guy the other day that was offended by one of my subject lines. And he's like, you know, how dare you, I've unsubscribed. And I just replied and put, oh, here's my bothered face, and I just put a smiley face. It's like, you know, you get to a point where you don't, why deal with people you don't want to deal with? You know, it's your boss, right? It's your boss at the end of the day. You decide who gets on and who gets off. Don't fall victim to this thinking, oh, the customer is king, the mighty customer, you know, and they should tell me what, bollocks to that. You know, because it'll eat you up. It'll definitely eat you up. So, again, this is one of these shifts that's, in relative terms to me, in terms of how long I've been doing this, is fairly recent. But again, huge change in income when you do this, and huge change in just energy and just happiness with a business. We just think, well, forget it. I don't care. Well, this is who I am, and some people like it, and some people won't.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Regarding Frank Kern went the opposite way. He went from surfer,
right,
and I didn't understand that move. But you know, in the beginning, he was F-bomb this, and but now he's suit and tie,
right?
And so I don't quite understand.
Yeah, I've postulated about the move myself. I mean, I do know Frank a little bit. I have worked with him a couple of times. I'm not. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to ask him exactly why he did that. My impression is he was trying to be the kind of the ultimate figurehead for his target market. So I think his target market back then was, you know, he wanted to attract people that wanted to make money and beat and surf, you know, slacker, millionaire slacker kind of mentality. I think that's, I mean, he was that guy. I'm not saying he wasn't a figure of fiction or whatever. But now I think he's trying to position himself more in the realm of sort of J. Abraham, mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know. His target market has changed.
Exactly, yeah. But I still think he's himself.
Right.
I mean, I agree, he's definitely changed his brand, he's changed his image, but he still doesn't give a shit. You know, he'll still say it how it is.
Right. Just more polished.
Yeah, he's just more polished. So, coming back to this, we're in a little bit of a roundabout route there. So, weight, and we'll talk about this in a minute in terms of what's got different weight and what Facebook doesn't like. Affinity, which we've spoken about, how to get interaction and likes and shares. And then you've got this thing, decay, time decay. So as soon as you post anything on Facebook, it is dying, right, with this little factor called time decay. The clock is ticking and it's starting to die away. Now, if it continues to get interactions and the affinity score for that particular post continues to go up, you can combat that time decay. Right? As long as it's still getting shares and likes or whatever, it's still going to be shown on more people's feed. But if it's not, this tails down rapidly. Right? And you can see this happen sometimes, and I know this. Like, if I put a post down and it's not got likes or comments or whatever in 5 minutes, it's bombed. It's dying. It's gone nowhere. There might be a few people that see it later in the day, but it's done. Whereas if I put one out and it's got, you know, within 5 minutes, got a few likes and shares, it's going to go and go. It's going to grow because the affinity is more important than this. It overrides it and keeps it kind of alive. So what this also means is that you want to be posting regularly because obviously a new post gives you a high score on this. It's a new thing. It's just been born. So you want the more you post, the more chance you've got of getting out there. But of course, you still need to be bearing in mind this affinity thing and putting things out there that get interaction. So what does all this mean? Well, when you put a post out, and this is why I asked you at the beginning of this little segment about have you ever put anything out and you're wondering why nobody's seen it, it's because of this. It's either you've posted the wrong type of thing or it's not got enough interaction or you've got a historically bad kind of rating, if you like, with this edge rank algorithm that Facebook has operating behind the scenes. Now, one of the things that they really do not like, anybody want to take a guess?
Posting outside links.
Correct. For obvious reasons, right? They don't want anybody leaving their website. They want everybody on there. Of course, if you're willing to line Mr. Zuckerberg's pocket with some lucre, then yeah, of course you can have as many external people going out to websites as you like through his ad network. But if you just make a regular post and put a link in, it's dangerous. We couldn't possibly show this on Facebook. I mean, this is an affiliate link. Yeah.
Real quick, I know that when you share somebody's Facebook post, inherently, it is a link, right?
Right.
But if you just grab the URL from the address bar and used that as a post, do they still consider that a Facebook share, or is it affected by the consideration that it is a link, or is it just any outside Facebook link?
Why would you want to do that? Sorry, what?
Well, let's say you're running a Facebook ad. Let's say,
right,
for instance, that's not being seen on your timeline.
Okay.
You can grab your Facebook link and say, "Hey, do me a favor, like this post."
And it's right. Okay.
A bit more, you know, engagement. Are they considering just any link posted in a post? With this formula,
right,
or are they seeing it as a Facebook link and therefore treating it differently?
I mean, I know for sure that any external link beyond Facebook is downgraded massively. And if you're posting direct affiliate links, JVZoo, for example, you can't
even do that.
Yeah, you can't even do it on Facebook anymore. Like, no, I'm not having that. That's money going away from Facebook, so we're not having that. With what you're saying about a Facebook thing, I don't know, is the honest answer. I would guess that they probably don't downgrade it because it's a pretty simple thing for them to recognize that you're still keeping people on Facebook. So at this point, it's like, well, okay, we've developed this following, we've got the account, we've developed the following, and you may be down here already, you may be doing all this stuff already. How are we going to get people to a position where they're on our page or when we're getting to click an affiliate link if we can't even put affiliate links on here? So there's a couple of different ways of doing this. Now the first way, which most people do, is if you just post a link. Now with JVZoo you can't do that because it will give you a warning message and say, no, this is highly unethical and how could they possibly want to make money from this thing? There's still ways around that. You could use like a link cloaker and it would kind of, hide the link. But that is still in itself still going to be an external link. So a couple of ways to do it. One of the ways that I do is, sorry, I'll come around this side, is I would just write my link, whatever it is, michaelchaney.com. I will say the link is just called one because I run out of room here. So a normal link, if you type it into Facebook and you have this all together without the gap, it's going to recognize this as a link. And you'll post it and very little will happen. It will get downgraded because of that formula. Very few people will see it. Unless it gets like huge interaction right out of the gate, it's just not going to get the exposure that you need it to get. So what I do is I remove this. I leave a space here when I'm typing this in. Right, so this is not a clickable link on Facebook. Cannot click it. But what I do in brackets, actually sometimes I don't even do it anymore because now my audience know that I do this, but I just put in brackets here, remove space to get to the secret link kind of thing. You just make a bit of a laugh of it. Zuckerberg's trying to kill me, remove the space to bypass his dictatorship or whatever. So that's one way around it. Right? So people would just copy this, most people can copy and paste, and if they don't, you probably don't want them as a customer because they'll be a support nightmare. But they copy this, they stick it in the browser, just remove this space, bosh, off they've gone to your link. The other way, and this is the preferred way, this is pretty much what I do when I'm putting links on. The other thing that you can do is you make the post without a link, so you tell the story or whatever it is, you run through the promotion, which I'll just cover quickly here in a basic form. So you would say, let's use that YouTube example, we'll keep coming back to that. So, are you frustrated that you're not getting ranked on YouTube? Or, just the other day I was really hacked off, I'd created this video, it took me 2 hours, I stuck it in YouTube, it was nowhere. Then I found this cool thing and worked through it and lo and behold, now I'm like number five, have a look at this. Whatever, you're keeping it informal, it's just a story, this is where I was, this is what I did, this is what happened, link. So you make the post of that, and then what you can do is put the link in the comments as a secondary step. Oops. All right, so you make the post without a link, you tell the story, this is where I was, this is a nightmare, problem, pain. This is what I did, process, this is a result, awesome, desire, solution, great. Click the link in comments to go grab the thing. Because this isn't a post in its own right. And you've kind of bypassed Facebook a little bit because you've got this initial post that's just text, is not downgraded because there's no link in there, hopefully it gets affinity and so on. But of course, it's still important that whatever you are posting there does get interaction likes, which is why this idea of storytelling, being yourself, just getting across that personality is important. So if you just switch off and go back into, okay, business marketer mode, here's a great product, you just really check it out, blah, blah, blah. Nobody's going to like that. You're going to have the same effect of it not being shown to as many people on the Facebook news feed. So they're pretty smart in what they do. Obviously, they've got, billions of people using it. And they need that formula to constrain who sees what. But that's your way of kind of getting around it so that you can be shown, your post can be shown to as many people as possible. Yeah.
Since seeing your training videos, I've used both of those techniques in a lot of my posts now. And yeah, it's made a huge, huge, huge difference.
Right.
At first I was using the second version, putting it in the link in a comment below. And that was working great, but then it would get lost.
Yeah.
If you get a lot of comments, people don't see the earlier comments. So I keep putting it in there. Where do I go? And then more recently I've started using the first technique and it always remains there at the top.
Yeah.
Works great, so thank you.
Cool. No, you're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I didn't mention that. Yeah, it can get buried if you use this method. That's why I use this one. I don't know why, but for some reason, sometimes I just forget to do it. I just get lazy and just think, oh, I'll fire the link and I'll take the hit. Yeah. But, I mean, for all it takes, you really should be doing this method.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Explain to take away the space, or do you leave that out?
You'd certainly want to do it for the first few times that you use it. Yeah, I mean, I mean, sometimes I do. I would still mention it, but I think most
people can figure it out. But
yeah,
a lot of people don't know anymore.
Yeah, particularly when you're starting out, you definitely want to be explaining what's going on there, because it will throw people. Yeah. But yeah, no, that's a good point, Mike. It can get buried. The other thing is, I should have said. I would recommend this method. So if you are using the comment method for any reason as opposed to this one, then you want to wait for that interaction first before you stick the comment in. You want to kind of get that momentum of the affinity score going on the post before you then stick in the link in, as a comment. Okay, so any more questions on that? Because I know I kind of whizzed through that. Yeah.
So you can't put the link in the comments until somebody makes a comment, right. And you respond with, here's the link.
Well, you can. I mean, you can, but it's better to get some form of interaction, whether it's just somebody liking the post or sharing it or just something to get that score going. If you see, get that momentum going before you then stick the link in.
Can you like it yourself?
You can like it yourself. I'm not sure, personally don't know what effect that has. I know some people do it, some people don't. I mean, it probably can't do any harm. To me, it doesn't look the greatest, particularly if you've not got any more likes. Ooh, I like my post. Hello, does anybody else like my post? But yeah, there's no harm. Sometimes I do it. What's that?
A lot of people do it.
I've seen them do it, yeah.
They post it and then they immediately like it themselves.
Yeah, well, it's for that reason, I would guess. It's for that affinity reason. I don't know.
Well, there's a user over 10 accounts.
Pardon?
Use your other 10 accounts.
No, I wouldn't recommend that. I wouldn't recommend that.
Oh, yeah, don't do that. They caught me doing that with one of my other accounts. Don't do that ever.
Yeah.
Don't interact the two, multiple accounts with one another.
Yeah, don't.
now, is it just a natural thing that posts that are shared doesn't happen all that often as compared to liking and commenting, because getting likes, getting comments, pretty simple once you've kind of established your audience.
But right.
Shares seem to be the ones. Do you know of any,
ninja stuff?
Ninja stuff.
I think we're entering ninja territory. No, sadly. Apart from asking for them. I mean, I know people that do. Again, it's like grey hat. It's a grey area. I know some guys are like, oh, if I get to 100 likes and, step one, like this. Step two, share it. And then step three, I'll give you a link. I've seen that and it seems to work. Personally, I'm not too sure. I don't think Facebook would like it if they caught wind of it, because you're kind of manufacturing the... it's an artificial thing that you're doing. I mean, to get shares naturally and organically is difficult. You've got to put something pretty awesome out there for people to think, oh, yeah, I'm going to share this with my friends. And if you're doing promotions, it's got to be a pretty good story that you're putting up there. I don't get many shares. I do have a couple of stalkers that will just share whatever I put out, which is quite hilarious. But, literally anything, they'll share it. But yeah, normally it's not... yeah, it just doesn't happen that often. Yeah. Okay. So, freebies. We've spoken about this before a little bit. you know, there's these two trains of thoughts about what you should give away to get people on your list. I was of the school of thought that, yeah, give that free thing away, get that report, get them on. But you can end up with a lot of freebie seekers by, you know, by definition, just by default. The other thing is it does get you into that mentality, if you get into the habit of giving freebies away, that you're associating that with progress. You know, oh, I've created another thing and people are enjoying, you know, where's the money? Show me the money, right? You've got to focus on that. It also does give them a sense of kind of power and control that, you know, okay, well, you know, that they're entering into this relationship on their terms. Which, as I said before, you don't want this bow down to the customer thing. It's your business. It's your life. You know, do it your way. If they don't like it, they can get out. So if you're starting this with a free thing, it has that. It's initially you're kind of doffing the cap to them. So, oh, please enter my business. Here's the free thing. Whereas if you're just saying, no, I've got this cool stuff, and here's how much it is, and let's stick, you know, buy it or leave it. It's a different. You know, you've set the stall out differently right from the beginning. Obviously, if you do a freebie model first, you're going to have a longer wait time until that first sale, because you're going to have people go through the thing that they've invested in. They may even use it as an excuse not to. I haven't looked at that yet. Let me look at the report yet, and then I'll get, you know. So you get all that going on. So it gives you that sense that, oh, you know, you get that kind of dopamine hit of, oh, I've helped people, I've given this free thing away. And then you start to have this kind of dichotomy in your mind that there's pitching over here, which is bad and evil, and oh, I really don't like it, and I'm going to have to sell people stuff. And then I've got freebie making over here, which makes me feel all warm and fuzzy, and it's great, but doesn't make me any money. And sometime I'm going to have to step out of here and go over to here, and I really don't like it. But the truth is, there's a happy middle ground where you can still have fun, be yourself, and make money at the same time without giving free stuff away. So creating freebies and getting into that kind of trap, if you like, can be a problem. It's not necessarily like the end of the world. It's not like a totally bad thing to do. I mean, it will get people on the list. There will be good people that come into that list. There'll be bad people. But if I was starting out now, you know, with what I know now, I'd probably just go straight to an offer, or, you know, at least even on the landing page an offer, or you know, that first email, hit them with an offer. You want to get them off that free train and that free mentality as soon as possible. But ideally, I would just, as I do, and I'll show you examples, I think we're going to come onto some in a second online, shortly, I just get right to the offer. Just get them on the list, hit them with the offer. Okay. It's an easy out. I've kind of touched on some of this already. It kind of, yeah, traps you into thinking, yeah, okay, so I've already gone through that stuff. This is what you can do, and this is what I kind of recommend. So you can go straight from landing page through to the offer itself, right? So you're getting people opted in. You've made a promise with that headline. You've maybe had the pain thing there, or maybe the desire, or a combination of two. Sometimes difficult to do when you've got a short headline. Like that, and you're getting them into your list, and you're presenting them with an offer right away. So typically on a landing page, you're going to have that main headline at the top. This is going to be something that will, as I say, it'll appeal to their desires, their wants, what they're looking for. You might have bullet points on there that are going to explain what they're going to discover. And historically, this used to be for the freebie, right? So you would say, okay, here's what you're going to learn, and yada yada yada. But now you can do this, and this is what I do, is do it for the offer. You know, I'm kind of protecting the offer that you're going to discuss, because the offer is valuable. This is what the mentality we need to get out of is, we're not tricking people here by selling, we're helping them. And if they want us to, you know, it's our choice to make this offer available for them to view. And if they want to see it, because it's awesome and we've made it and we've spent the time learning this stuff and putting in the time and effort, they're going to have to put in their email address. So if they don't want it, fine. So you've got the opt-in box, call to action to get them actually do the stuff, and obviously it comes down to the copyright, and we'll look at examples in a second. So curiosity is a huge, huge motivating factor. I've got this written on my monitor at home. It's like one of these things that just you need to be reminded of it daily. Pain will get people to buy. Curiosity will get people to look at stuff, right? To look at the offer that you're presenting. There's a great, great late copywriter called Gary Halbert, and he had this conversation one time, and he was quoted as saying that curiosity was the number one reason why people buy. It's curiosity, not want, desire, or pain. He believed it was curiosity. Find out what is on the other side. And I think we've all seen that in action for ourselves, right? On various different sales letters, you get a piece of the puzzle. You're not quite sure, what is this? How does he do this? What's going on here? Let me see it. And you can use that, and you should be using curiosity in everything that you do. Yeah?
Now, is that the same as, like, pure blind sales copy? Because what I'm hearing is the landing page for the opt-in, you leave a little curiosity as to what they're going to find out on the other side, whereas the other side sometimes still doesn't give you what the actual product or
right.
service is until you buy it, and then you're like, oh, this is complete garbage.
Right, right. Yeah, again, it's a balance, right? It's about a balance. So from a sales copy point of view, from the letter selling the product or the email selling the affiliate product, you want to, what is it? I think it was Ben Settle taught me this, and it was, you want to keep it, it's like a skirt. You want to keep it so long that it covers the details, but short enough so it's still interesting. Right, so you're revealing, you're revealing something, okay? You are revealing something. It's, I know there used to be a phase, probably like 5 years back or so, where everybody was like totally blind copy. Oh, it's not this. It's not this, and it's not. And you're like, what the fuck is this thing then? And you had to buy it to find out what it was. So, yeah, we're not talking about that. We're talking about using it in a way that they know what the thing is, but they don't know, you know, don't tell them how. Right?
Yeah.
Tell them the what, don't tell them the how. So in all my sales letters, and I'm going to give you a walkthrough, we're going to go through a sales letter, and as part of this training, I'm going to show you and explain to you how it all works, why this is done, and all this stuff. A lot of the curiosity that I do is in the, obviously in the main promise, in the headline, normally money orientated, because that's the target market I'm going after. The initial, you want to have, you want them to have a lot of questions in their mind, right? How is he doing this? How is this possible? How are the, you know, how are these results achieved? What, you know, how does this work? What's involved? So, and you address some of them, but you don't give the whole game away. Right? So it's like that example, that slide that I've totally forgot what the secret was. Here's a simple secret that's made me millions or whatever. When it has, but it's that curiosity thing. It, you know, you reveal a little bit, but you don't reveal the whole thing. And you need to use it in all of your marketing, really, to get people to take action. So my emails used to be like, okay, here's the product, here's what it does. It's like a, you know, it's a cool widget, and you go in, you click this, and it'll send you traffic, and it's awesome, and yada, yada. Now, it's more, they're more story-based, it's more sort of personal stuff. This is something that I've been up to, and you know, this is what I did in my life, and this leads me on to this example, and this is kind of cool, because you can achieve this similar result with this. And they have to click the link to find out what I'm actually talking about. Like, oh, what is this thing, this super cool thing? Because the sales letter does the job of selling. And a lot of people in their affiliate promotions and their emails think they've got to sell the product. But you're not. You're selling the click. You're getting people there. Don't try and do the job of the sales letter in your promotions and in your emails and your videos. Because that's not your job. Your job is to get people there in a state of mind that they're super curious and want to know and are going to pay attention to the materials that the expert or whatever has actually created and drafted to sell the product. So yeah, some of the best emails now that I put out in terms of sales and responses are pretty blind copy. So it's things like, oh, you know, if you want to get this kind of result, you know, if you're struggling, this is something that I've done. You know, it's pretty cool. It only takes, you know, 15 minutes a day, and you know, it's got nothing to do with SEO. And it, here it is. Oh, I mean, you at least want to see what it is. You know, even if you're not in a sort of buying mood, you're, ah, God damn it, what is it? right? And then they get the detail of what it is and everything explained on the sales letter. So I think going blind like that is totally fine as long as you can back it up before they buy, which is done on sales letters. I wouldn't... Yeah, go ahead.
I'm talking more of even on the sales letter, it's completely blind sales. For instance, new traffic source, and this was the sales letter, new traffic source, completely untapped. They showed a bunch of proofs, but never, and the it was training on how to use this traffic source, not the traffic source itself.
Oh, right.
And then I come to find out it's Quora.
Right.
And it's like, totally not interested in this.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, as I said, a few years back, it was pretty popular to do these kind of sales letters. I personally, they'll get a lot of sales, but they get a lot of refunds as well doing stuff like that.
They get a lot of refunds. Yeah.
It's that balancing act. How I use curiosity in my sales letters, as I say, is with a kind of big promise in the headline, you know, usually money-orientated with the results, and right out the gate, they're like, okay, how is this happening? Then, in the bullet points that describe the program, rather than saying, you know, in minute 21, you'll learn let's take that Facebook example, you know, in minute 21, you'll learn about EdgeRank and how you can, you know, boost your affinity score to get more. No, I'm not giving any of that away. I don't want to scare people off for one, and I don't want to get into the detail. You know, I'd put something like, stealthily secret Facebook method Zuckerberg doesn't want you to know, which can save you thousands on ad spend. So it's kind of saying what it is, but it's not.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
you're
using curiosity, but you're not. It's not total cloak and dagger. Like, what the hell is this? You know, you've got. You don't have to fork out money to know what the thing is. You've got to fork out money to know how to do it.
Yeah. Also, I hear a lot about micro commitments and
right.
That can help get the mindset ready to click or buy or whatever. But in your emails, you are actually getting a very good micro commitment just by clicking that email.
Right.
So I guess you are using that as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's about it's getting them into that frame of mind. Getting them into the frame of mind so that you're dropping them on the sales letter in an open and receptive state. You know, they're like eager to know what this thing is and how it works. Rather than just saying, you know, having people click on, okay, I know roughly what this thing does. It's an XYZ widget. It's $10. Let me go have a look at it. It's a totally different mindset, right? They're already sitting back. You know, they're probably, what is this? Whereas if you've built it up, you've used that curiosity, you maybe used a personal story, like, oh, what is this? They're like, they're leaning forward. You know, they're reading everything. They're going through it. So it's an entirely different proposition that, you know, different state that you're kind of putting them in with that. Activate their greed glands, okay? I use this quite a lot, this phrase, especially for JVs. We'll come on to getting affiliates and joint venture partners when you come to create your own products. We're going to talk about that. I think we're covering that tomorrow. Don't be afraid to do that. As I said, this all comes from a position of help, right? I do need to keep reinforcing it. I don't want to come across try to tell people, make all this money and whatever. We want people to take action because we have something that can help them. And if you don't have something that can help them, go back to square one, right? Forget everything else that we're talking about here. But once you have that, these are the methods that you use to get people to improve their lives in some way and, pay it forward and whatever it is they want to do with their success. Okay, so we're going to try and go online here and show you a landing page. Let's see how this goes. Thanks. Okay, so this is on my homepage, michaelchain.com. So this is my main evergreen funnel. I'm going to get into the detail of this later in the training and actually walk you through this. This is like the best converting opt-in page that I've ever created in, 10 years. It's awesome. That is why you've got part of this same thing with your funnel. Somebody was asking me, it's yourself, was it? It's pretty basic. We've got a video going off behind here, which is pretty effective. It uses something called I think it's called Landing Page Monkey, which is a bit of software you can plug in, and it'll feed in a YouTube video behind the the opt-in page. You just plug in a YouTube URL and it'll show any YouTube video. So this is obviously a video that I've created with my iPhone, recording income on my PC and then feeding that in behind the opt-in page. So yeah, this is obviously a desire-based headline, only way left for a little guy to get rich online. We've got specifics. The more specific you can be in your marketing, the better results you'll get, right? Not necessarily with, obviously with money, but also with results. You know, so if you start, if you go off into your learning cave and become this little express expert at something, whenever you get results and you're talking about them and trying to get people engaged with you, the more specific you can be, the better, right? The more specific. So you'll notice whenever I put amounts in, pretty much almost every time I'll go down to the cent. Because otherwise people are, you know, I made about 300 grand doing that. Like, well, did you? Or, you know, the more specific you can be, the better with figures and with results. So this is real simple. That is the opt-in page. That's it right there. And if you go ahead, opt in here. Let's just put here. Whiteboard Willie at hotmail.com, because I know he's a keen follower. Let's see here. Okay, it's loading. It's a little bit slow because we've got videos on both these pages. So what's happening behind the scenes here is Willie is now being added to my Evergreen follow-up series, which we'll get into the detail. I'll show you this in another session. I'll show you through each of the emails. Basically, he's going to get an email every day, more than one, to be honest, for about a week to 10 days. I'll just pause that, otherwise it'll be Cheney and stereo. Nobody wants that. So yeah, this is an offer page right here. So no freebie, no messing about. If I scroll down on this thing a sec.
I love the strategy. Enter your email and I will allow you to see my sales page. It's absolutely brilliant.
So yeah, this is a sales page. You'll notice though, if you scroll down, you can't buy anything yet. Right? So testimonials is in a video. So what happens on this page is, obviously the video runs, it's time delayed, yeah, so it's time delayed. So after the video's got to a certain point, a buy button and the sales letter appears. So I've got a text version, kind of what I'm saying in the video appears underneath. So they can kind of, okay, this is what I'm getting, this is what's involved, here's the buy button. And yeah, basically the follow-up series just pitches this product for a week. So they see this instantly. Some people obviously buy right away. Some people buy, you know, day two or day three. Some people don't buy. That's fine. They're on my list. Some people unsubscribe, whatever. This is going on all the time, 24/7, 365. It's set up now. I don't have to do anything about it. Yeah.
I never noticed, but do people who purchase immediately still receive those emails?
Yes.
I think for this campaign, I took them out.
Do you have to manually do that, or is there like a smart way to...
No, there's an automated way. Yeah, I did actually take them out for this, because what happens... Anybody want to guess what happens when they buy this product from me, what I do with those people? Bing. Bada bing. Right? So they get on a list to promote this product, keeps promoting. If they don't buy, they're graduated, then they get my general broadcasts. If they buy, automatically get added to a list which promotes the next product in the funnel, again, for another week. And I'll show you the detail kind of behind the scenes of this. So yeah, that's how that works. So yeah, it's very effective, it's very simple. And so don't be worried by the video, you can put anything on here. You could just, as we've done for some of you, you know, for you guys, you're going direct to somebody else's sales letter. It's fine, right? You've promised them this thing, that they're going to learn how to do this thing. Here it is. This is going to show you how to do it. Some will buy, some won't. So what? Let's move on, right? You're building that list. You're getting buyers. You're getting prospects. And that's it. So let me give you another example. So we're going to switch back here. second. So this is just another example of a landing page. It's not a funnel. This is actually for an orientation call or a webinar that I do after my launches, just to give you an idea of what a landing page can look like. As I said, with that video one, from all the testing that I've done, unless it's to something customer orientated like this, where people have bought and were saying, look, this is for you because you're a customer and this is a special customer training, unless it's something like that, the highest opt-in rate is with that video page that I've shown you. Obviously, for obvious reasons, you've got the income proof there in the background. It's very simple. It's got that appeal that people want to get in and find out. So this has got a few more copywriting elements, and we will get into the sales letter and stuff like that as well. But a few points. So you might think, okay, this is a landing page, but there's so much going on here. I want to cover some of it. So this idea here, you should attend this live call because it's not been recorded. So this was an orientation call after Commission Cartel. Who here, I'm guessing most of you, has been on one of my orientation calls after a launch? Okay, some of you, okay. Yes. So basically how this works, and this is we're kind of getting into high ticket strategy here, which we're covering towards the end of the last day. When I do a product launch, we've got the funnel of different products, so the front end products and so on, and then we move on to the high ticket products at the back, which typically I will sell on a webinar, live webinar presentation. So we have this live orientation call for all the buyers of said product, and this gets them onto the call. Now the cool thing about this is you can automate this process so that when people buy a product from JVZoo, they are added to the webinar automatically. So what's happened previously is I've launched, I can't remember if it was this product, maybe it was another product. After the end of launch, we had about 4,000 people registered for the webinar because they were automatically, as buyers through JVZoo, it automatically linked them into GoToWebinar. And then in the members area for that product, I would say, welcome to the members area. We're doing a live orientation call. You've been registered to save you time. Check your inbox for this email. But if you haven't got the email or you want to register again, here's a link. And this would take them to this page. So you get quite a few people that are opting in for this page as well. You kind of get a little bit of duplication. But what happens is it means you get almost all your buyers are pumped up and ready to attend that orientation call. Now, in a nutshell, that orientation call is a combination of training and pitch, basically. So you need to fulfill on the fact it's an orientation call. So what I would teach is, a traffic strategy or something that's free and complementary to, in parallel with what they've just invested in. And then I'd say, okay, well, let's move on and talk about, an opportunity for further investment or education or whatever it might be, something that's all got to be in line with the initial product. And we'll come on to that high-ticket stuff later. This page obviously worked really well because the guys, they were customers. They wanted to get onto this event. But we kind of amped it up a little bit still with, using the good copy, using countdown timer here, and not recording it, right? Actually not recording the event, which was a big move. Back in the day, I used to record trainings that I was doing. I used to have them all screen recorded. You put out the replay, so people are like, I'll maybe watch it later. When you do this and you say, well, no, it's going down tonight, and either you're on or you ain't, obviously attendance goes through the roof. Plus, and I think it's on here. Let me move this down a sec. Okay, yeah. I was able to put in the social proof, and at this point, obviously when I took this screenshot, there were 1,743 people registered. So you can just wipe out all that sales copy right now, and just the fact that 1,743 people are registered for this is enough to get more people to want to be on there. Particularly when we were saying here, there's only, with GoToWebinar, there's 1,000 seats. I think it's more now, depending on the version you've got, but at the time, can only get 1,000 people on there. And we did max out. We got a little warning coming up. It's people trying to get in that couldn't get in. So by using that scarcity, by saying like we can only take so many people, it's only taking place at this time, it creates this huge demand. And we filled up the event, obviously, you know, everybody, you know, got value from what we taught, and then, you know, a bunch of people bought the offer. Now with this, I said that obviously we didn't record the session. I mean, the session went on for, I don't know if you guys have been on some of the longer ones, but they can go on like three hours or something. It's crazy because, you know, we're doing the training with me, you know, blabbermouth here, you know, like 45 minutes could be for the training. Then we segue into the offer and, you know, and all that, and then we're opening up for questions. It could be quite a long session. So even practically speaking, it wasn't really going to work to do a replay, you know, replay, record that, and then expect people to sit through that non-live. Obviously, when it's live, it's different because they're asking questions, I'm answering them, so on. But I wasn't going to walk away from all the people that couldn't attend and just say, if you weren't there, you can't buy it. Yeah? So what I did, and I've not seen anybody else do this, I'm kind of proud of this. I don't, you know, I don't like inventing stuff. If there's something that works, I'll just do it. I'll just model it and obviously, you know, ethically, you know, kind of copy what other people are doing and that kind of thing. But when I do manage to come up with something on my own, I'm like, oh, this is cool. So what I did with this is I created what's called an encore session. And what I do is I create a video, and I basically say some of you might have seen it. So I'm in my kitchen typically, I started changing rooms because I've done so many of them, it was all seeming a bit deja vu. But basically, I would say, look guys, unfortunately not everybody could make this call. Right? There's only 1,000 seats, some of you got locked out, obviously time zone, some of you are working, whatever. So I'm going to take you through the training right now. So I've got my Mac here in front of me. I'm going to accelerate you through this. You know, we were on the call for like 3 hours, but I'm going to take you through this in 30 minutes. So grab a pen and paper, let's go. And then go over to my Mac, do a screen capture, and I will do the presentation again in like, you know, chipmunk mode. Right? Go through it and get twice as many sales from that than we did from the actual, from live session. While still, you know, sticking to my word, we didn't record it. It wasn't a live thing. Obviously, there's no interaction. We generated, you know, huge buzz and scarcity for the live event, and those guys did get more because obviously they got the interaction and the Q&A and whatever, and they get a special offer for being on the live webinar also that nobody else gets. But I didn't want to lose sales from all the people that couldn't make it. So we then run that for a week. So I don't know if you remember, obviously we're going back, I don't know about yourself, but it probably feels like you've taken about a week's worth of information already. But back when we spoke about the year planner, and I showed you my year planner on screen, you might remember I said, oh, here's a launch, you know, is it like over here? Here's a launch in November, and then the following week is the back end week. Don't know if you remember that. That's when I do this. Right, so I do the live call a couple of days after the launch ends, and then after then, that whole week is driving people to that encore session. But then we use the scarcity again in that, right? Because we pull that down. We put a countdown on that at a certain time, so you create scarcity and urgency for people to go ahead and invest in that offer also. So these are kind of, you know, I don't want to glaze anybody over. I know this is kind of a bit more advanced stuff. We will be getting into more of the high ticket strategies later on, but again, just sort of full transparency. This is what I'm doing in my business. As I said right at the beginning, I'm showing you everything that I do. And as far as I know, nobody else has caught wind of this yet, that encore strategy. Most people, what they do is they record the replay, they record the webinar, and they just put that up, and it's boring as hell. They get sales, but, you know, to sit through all that at the normal live speed, oh, hi guys, here we are, let's do a few shout outs, and you're like, you know, great if you're there live, but you don't want to be sitting through that the day after. And the energy level is different because you know you weren't there. Whereas with what I've done, it's more personal. It's like, you know, I'm in my kitchen here, guys, let's go through this. And there's a bit more, you know, I'm pumped up again to do it rather than being this old thing that I'm just watching that, you know, that I wasn't there for. And yeah, you don't need to appear in front of the camera to do this. You just need to have some slides or whatever and just go through the offer or, you know, whatever it is. So I believe, let me just have a look. Yeah, I think that is it for lunch. Have we got any questions? We've got a few minutes here before we break. I'm also going to just tell you about something really cool just now. I'm going to use curiosity and actually talk the talk and walk the walk. we've got, obviously, as you know, we've got these awesome media guys from MCL. They're going to be setting up or available during launch today and tomorrow to take video testimonials from you. We've got a little breakout room just opposite the way here. So I'd really appreciate if you've got, I know some of you already, I know Rob, you came up and said you'd already, it's already been paid for with what you got from the first session. If anybody's got anything they'd like to share about what they've learned so far, you can go in, you know, more than once, it's fine, or you can wait till tomorrow. If you're not comfortable doing it, obviously don't do it. It will possibly be in your best interest. That's all I'm going to say at this point. But I'd appreciate it if you do that. Anyway, just grab one of these guys once we break here for lunch, or, you know, when you come back from lunch, if you could just, you know, share with other people what you've got from the event so far, that would be awesome.